just about every chronic disease really is, it's an epigenetic response to stress is what it is. It's genes being expressed that are the genes that are kind of like the weakest place you fall into based on what your thought patterns happen to be at that time.
When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
And that is the story of human progress.
One inch at a time.
I'm your host, Joe DiStefano, and you're listening to Stack. In today's episode, I sit with my good friend, the one and only Ben Greenfield. Now, my goal for this episode was to deliver an interview or a conversation that was Ben in a little bit of a different light than you're used to seeing him. So I didn't want to just make it about biohacking and stem cell injections and all these things he does, but I wanted to make it about Ben, the person, the father, the inspirational figure, right? The authority and thought leader in the space of fitness, health, longevity, anti-aging. And I think we did a pretty good job. Ben and I, we talk about the body as a battery and how to keep our battery charged, because seemingly everything in a modern world is sucking our energy and our time, but we need to know how to put it back. We talk about purpose and finding our unique purpose in this life. We talk about relationships. We talk about how Ben, being a father of two young boys, has not only influenced his purpose, but has sort of provided a filter for how he spends that precious time and energy. Ben really kind of opens up a little bit on this episode, and I think we tackle some areas you're not going to hear anywhere else. So enjoy today's episode with Ben Greenfield. Today's episode is brought to you by some awesome, exclusive, Stacked-only listener Black Friday specials from some of my favorite brands. The first is Blue Blocks, these amazing blue blocking shades that I've been wearing all the time that come in more styles and different frames, prescription or non, than you'll find anywhere else. They also come in all these different shades so that if you're on your computer all day, you can filter out that really harmful ultraviolet light, but not all of the blue light because you need some of it to stay awake during the day. All the way up to the fully red shades where in the hour or two before bed, if you are up watching Netflix or just have white lights in your house, you're going to want to protect yourself from that blue light. And I'll tell you what else. We're going to air a podcast in just a few weeks with the founder of Blue Blocks, Andy, and you're going to want the shades then, but you're not going to be able to save 25% like you are only on Friday, November 29th with code RUNGA25. That's right. So head to www.blublox.com and use code RUNGA25 at checkout to save 25% on the best blue blocking shades on the market. You're not going to want to miss this, so act fast. And while you're there, you may want to throw in the Remedy sleep mask. I sleep with this thing almost every single night. It's been a game changer for travel, and it's not all that expensive. So check out Blue Blocks and capitalize on this amazing deal. Next up, we've got my buddy Adam Von Rothfelder at Strong Coffee. You're going to save up to 30% off bundles of Strong Coffee, plus mugs, swag, water heaters, all sorts of amazing things from Strong Coffee. Just head to www.strongcoffeecompany.com and use code STACKED at checkout. Now, Adam's going to be running all kinds of epic sales at strongcoffeecompany.com. You're going to save with or without our code STACKED. But when you use it, when you use code STACKED, you're going to get a free set of our Runga mobility balls and Adam's ebook, Breaking Fast, with your order. So use code STACKED anytime from Friday, November 29th, all the way until Cyber Monday, December 2nd, and capitalize on some amazing deals on some of the best, strongest coffee around. Next up, I've got an amazing deal for you to track your hormones and what is happening inside of your body to help you optimize your performance. This is from my buddies at Inside Tracker. Now, if you listen to the last show, I actually posted my cholesterol that they've been tracking since 2015 with their ultimate package. Now, the ultimate is incredible. It's 43 different biomarkers that are going to tell a story about your performance, your recovery, your sleep, your diet. And they also provide recommendations based on that blood work to help you navigate and optimize what's happening inside your body. This is the most comprehensive panel around. Your doc would probably never order it. And with code CHEERSSTACKED, now that's all one word, CHEERS, stack, two S's, you're going to save $200 off the ultimate panel, which is an incredible deal. And you're going to save from Black Friday, November 29th, all the way through the weekend to December 2nd at midnight. But act fast, because this actually also has an amazingly fast turnaround. So if you order on Black Friday, within the next week or so, you could have your results online checking out the recommendations from Inside Tracker. So this is a great test. Do not miss this opportunity. It is the best deal of the year if you want to do a deep dive into your physiology.
See, I'd say ephedra and amphetamine, some crack.
What are your thoughts on ephedra? Because I remember back... whenever it was, you know, it was like a miracle drug. And then the next day it was gone.
Yeah. Well, it was kind of like heart attack in a packet. If the wrong person picks it up at the gym.
Right.
I mean, really, that's Dr. Thomas Cowan's entire theory. Well, it's not the entire theory of his book about heart disease and management of heart disease, entitled The Heart Is Not a Pump. He gets into a lot of elements of minerals and the structure in the bloodstream of the actual cells themselves, the necessity of an exclusion zone, the same as Gerald Pollack has shown in his lab at University of Washington, meaning that you need a proper charge inside the cells from the travel through vasculature, through vessel, the same way as they would in a plant, and the purpose of the heart, and this was the entire theory of his book, The Heart Is Not a Pump, is to facilitate the movement of blood with that proper exclusion zone up and through the heart and out through the rest of the body. And the pumping action, from a physics standpoint, from a pure physics standpoint, is not sufficient. If you look at the capillary network of the body, the physics of the pump of the heart, it's not powerful enough to push the blood through miles and miles of capillaries, especially capillaries that are that small, with that much resistance to pressure. And so instead, the heart is a shape called a tetrahedron in the center of the chest. And the shape of that, when it beats, spiralizes the blood in the same way that a structured water filter spiralizes water, restores an exclusion zone to the water with a positive and a negative charge. And that exclusion zone of the blood, in this case, is what allows it to travel via an electrical charge through all the capillaries and the vessels. So the heart, you could think of it roughly as a shape that, or a structure that electrically charges the blood to then allow that blood to travel through the rest of the body in the same way that water would travel through a plant. So it's a very interesting book, but back to the ephedra piece. The hypothesis in that book is that many healthy people who suffer from a cardiovascular incident during exercise, like a triathlete you might find dead in the water, or a marathoner who drops dead at the 10-mile mark, it's based on sympathetic overdrive and the paraventricular contractions or electrical abnormalities that arise from that. And of course, one of the best ways to shove the vagus nerve that innervates the SA node of the heart into overdrive is with a very powerful stimulant, like ephedra. So essentially, let's say someone is doing work on their HRV and breath work and cold baths and, really working that parasympathetic nervous system. Well, if they take ephedra, they're going to activate sympathetic and overactivate parasympathetic. If the hard-charging exec who comes in to get his pump on, bro, you know, in the morning at the gym, who already has the morning cortisol circulating through their bloodstream, and maybe they're a little mineral depleted, so that blood isn't quite structured properly, and then you put them into a state of sympathetic overdrive, it's a recipe for disaster. But ephedra, you are correct. It is a hefty pick-me-up. You know, I used to do the Red Line. Remember the Red Line?
I do.
Red Line powders. So yeah. When I managed the North Idaho Athletic Club, you know, I would show up for work and I just have those things lined up, ready to go. By the end of the day, I'd have a final one lined up so I could go to my workout. You know, when I closed down the gym at, I think it was like 9 p.m. or so.
It sounds like you're doing them in a line or something.
That's when I'd start to get my pump on. Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Because I remember it looked like something you'd put in your gas tank. It was like this little blue metal bottle.
And they had a powder packet, too.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. But I'll tell you that one of the most readily available sources of ephedra, despite it being, to my understanding, it's banned. Like, it's not something that can be sold in a sports stimulant. But 2 years ago, when I did that immersive journalism article for Men's Health, mm-hmm. entitled New Year, New Dick.
Yes.
In which they sent me to the four corners of the planet to put stem cells in my penis and acoustic sound wave therapy on my balls and all manner of different sexual performance enhancing tactics. They also had me test out a collection of different so-called gas station dick pills that they selected and sent to my home for me to take. And some said take in the morning, some said take 30 minutes before sex. You know, so I would just follow the instructions on the packet. And I would, for the ones in the morning, experience like sweaty palms, racing heart rate, flushed face.
Yeah.
And the ingredients, of course, say, you know, ancient Chinese wisdom, whatever, horny goat weed, tribulus.
Right.
What are some of the other popular ones that were in that
pine pollen
claimed to be in there? Yeah, pine pollen, tonkata leaf.
That's a very popular one. For sure.
Epimedium. And we actually had several of these gas station dick pills, third party lab tested. And it turns out the two primary ingredients in them are sildenafil, the active component in Viagra, and ephedra. So essentially, these sex enhancers that you can just buy at the 7-Eleven or whatever, those are ephedra and Viagra, with who knows what else laced in there, because you know the mass spec just shows all sorts of different compounds. Right. You know, it's kind of sad, actually, because you know our friend Dr. Peter Attia just mm-hmm. did two separate exposés on Zantac carcinogenicity mm-hmm. and the enormous amounts of NMDA and a number of other different compounds that are proven carcinogens that are in this medicine that millions of people are taking.
Yeah.
And then he also did an expose based on a book written about the generic drug problems and how, you know, if you're buying from a generic pharmacy, these things are laced to the gills in that case, not carcinogens, but just, you know, a logarithmically low dose of what would be expected to be in that from a pharmaceutical standpoint, but then a bunch of other things that just had absolutely nothing to do with the pharmaceutical supplement itself, just like fillers and colors and things like that.
Right.
So, I'm not on the ephedra bandwagon.
Yeah, no. I thought you were going to say Sudafed, because isn't that still a source of ephedra?
I think so.
I think I remember a couple of years ago, some guy asked me about it.
If you had to choose between a gas station dick pill and have a raging,
so were you against
raging boner for 6 hours or just not be congested? I mean, which would you choose? It's easy.
But like, could you have any in that deal with Men's Health? Like, could you be like, I just can't put this in my, like, I don't know what's in it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as a journalist, you have a right of refusal for anything.
So is there anything you refuse?
You know, anything you refuse makes the story that much less sexier.
Right.
In this case, pun intended. I did not refuse anything that they mentioned, although the stem cells in the dick were that took a little bit of courage slash stupidity for me to ask the physician who had never, ever injected stem cells into a penis in his life
right.
to do it. But I had them shipped on ice from the U.S. Stem Cell Clinic to the lab in Spokane, and he did the nerve block.
So you're like...
He'd injected everything else on the body that exists with stem cells except a penis. And I recall him saying something like, well, let's see how this goes, like right before he started.
So take us through this. Are you – is this like shaft? Is this – where
the,
is this?
The corpus callosum. So okay. yeah, the shaft.
Yeah.
So three injections.
Got it.
Bilateral and on the anterior surface. And then – I actually did have it done again by an organization that is known for sexual performance enhancing protocols.
Right.
I don't want to give anyone the impression that I'm some type of a raging sex addict.
Yeah,
In the case of the former, it was for just an article that I thought would be interesting and, to be honest with you, good for my brand, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
And then in the latter, it was simply a case where I was doing a stem cell protocol that was like a full body under anesthesia, inject every joint.
Right.
And it just so happens that they included the penis in that protocol. Mm. You know, it's like just one of the many places they injected.
I 10, get one free.
And in that case, exactly, when I woke up, there was a needle mark in the actual head.
Oh.
So I know they did the head too in that case. But you know what's funny is my initial impressions that going into the first time I did it was I thought it would be the urethra. I thought, they just kind of put the stem cells into the pee hole. So yeah, that was what I envisioned. And then when I went in, it turns out it was basically the shaft.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it. So kind of going back to where we started a little bit with minerals, because I look at minerals a little bit like vitamin D, right? So it's this like, it's almost this prerequisite. And what I mean by that is I think a lot of us in this sort of longevity, wellness space, right? We are dabbling into, you know, Juve lights and cold immersion and all these things. And some people venturing into the more sort of costly, fringy stuff that you're talking about. But there's like, there's a couple of things. It's kind of like the executive that's got the sauna, they got all this, but then they get the vitamin D tested and it's completely deficient. So it's like, why are we so far down the road when there's these sort of like fundamental pieces that we desperately need, right? We need our blood sugar in play. We need our vitamin D in the right place. And I think minerals is this thing because ultimately I don't think a lot of people really understand the sort of science of what's actually happening with a mineral as it relates to like a Juve or a PEMF device. You know, how do we get the most out of those? What are your like preferred sources of minerals? And then if you could tell us a little bit about sort of that electrical relationship, because I think more and more we're hearing the body's a battery, but what you just said about the heart kind of brings that even closer, that makes that even more true, right?
Okay. Loaded question. First of all, regarding vitamin D levels being low in folks who apparently are optimizing their vitamin D via either sunlight or if you look at it from a biohacking standpoint, UVB bulbs, and
right.
you can buy tanning beds now that are outfitted with UVB bulbs mm-hmm. instead of UVA, like the Wolf tanning beds.
Okay.
There's also a company called Sperti, Sperti, that makes a vitamin D lamp that you can simply stand in front of for 4 to 8 minutes. And there is a company, I believe they're based out of Canada, developing something very similar to like a pod or a walk-in sauna, but it's a simple 3 to 4 minute treatment that is very bright, primarily UVB spectrum
mm-hmm.
that increases your vitamin D levels. So whether you're using one of those technologies or whether you're spending time in the sun, you may not adequately elevate your vitamin D levels if you carry the genetic SNP, and you would be able to determine this by doing a genome analysis and looking at the genes responsible for vitamin D absorption from sunlight. And it turns out some people cannot appreciably produce vitamin D in response to sunlight. I know this because I am one of those people.
Mm.
Both of my sons are one of those people. Therefore, for us to keep our vitamin D levels elevated, we must eat dietary sources of vitamin D, such as organ meats, mushrooms, etc., cod liver oil, supplement with vitamin D, vitamin K, you know, like the thorn liquid or something like that. And that's really the only way that we can keep our vitamin D up. So right. Some people, they are doing the right things. They're getting out right. Some that are using technologies, but they still would need to supplement with vitamin D.
What percentage of people is that? Is that a, because it seems like, I think, you know, the latest numbers, it's like, you know, 80% or under 25 or something.
Yes. Well, that's the number that's deficient, but that's not the number that necessarily has that genetic SNP. Right. I don't know the number. Mm-hmm. The DNA company who I tested with up in Canada, they probably have those stats, and I don't know if they've published them on their site. Mm-hmm. 23andMe, to my understanding, does not test for that SNP. So, you would need to get like a whole genome sequencing, such right. as through the Health Nucleus in San Diego or in LA.
Got it.
Or you would need to test through something like the DNA company mm-hmm. up in Canada or anyone else who does like a fuller yeah. genome sequencing and includes vitamin D.
Right.
So that being said, the importance of minerals lies in an understanding of something that I already alluded to, the fact that there is an exclusion zone that's mm-hmm. generated that allows blood to travel through vasculature. And if you want to understand more about how that exclusion zone works, there is a book called Cells and Gels in the Fourth Phase of Water by okay. Dr. Gerald Pollack
okay.
that describes the intricacies of the bonding in water that's very similar to essentially like structured water bonding mm-hmm. where it's not just H2O, but right. there are actual other charges in addition to the hydrogen and the oxygen bonds
okay.
that allow water to move through a vessel.
Right.
And in Pollack's experience or experiments, the water moves more readily through that vessel and the exclusion zone, the charge between the membrane of the vessel that fluid is moving through and the fluid itself is increased significantly when that fluid is exposed to photons of light. So they've done experiments in which they've showed water traveling up through a beaker at a far more rapid pace when exposed to specifically red and near-infrared frequencies
Got
of light
it.
Because photons tend to increase the electrical potential of that gradient.
Yeah.
So when you look at a cell, you essentially have a cytoplasm in which, you know, that's the fluid in mm-hmm. which all these organelles of the cell, like the mitochondria are yeah. floating. Mm-hmm. And then you have a nucleus where the DNA is packaged and expressed.
Right.
The cytoplasm itself is water that is in that gel phase that Dr. Pollack writes about in his book. It's not in a liquid phase. It's not in a vapor phase. It's not in a frozen phase. It's in a gel phase, very right. much like Jell-O. It is water molecules that are kind of like clumped together based on the charge between not just the hydrogen and the oxygen, but the charge between all the water molecules and the membrane
Got
of
it.
The cell itself. And so it is that gradient that allows for ATP to be produced within the cell. You must maintain those normal electrical charges within the cytoplasm of the cell.
Right.
Furthermore, it's that gradient that allows for sodium and potassium to be interexchanged across the membrane.
Right.
If you look up the work of Gilbert Ling on PubMed, he published a paper, I believe, in the early 2000s that completely it completely blew apart the notion that there are sodium potassium pumps.
Wow.
And instead proved that the movement of sodium and potassium inside and outside of the cell is based instead on this cytoplasm and the correct electrical gradient within that cytoplasm. And furthermore, we know that the cell membrane itself operates best in terms of cellular metabolism with an electrical potential of somewhere around the range of negative 60 millivolts,
okay.
although that changes from cell to cell. So even if smoke is coming out your ears listening to this explanation and you're not quite following, the best way I can explain it is this. Your body is a battery. There's a book by Robert Becker called The Body Electric, I believe is the title of the book. And essentially it dictates how our entire body operates on these electrochemical gradients
right.
that allow for things like sodium and potassium exchange to occur across the cell membrane that allows for this cytoplasm to exist in that natural gel type of solution around the nucleus and for all proper cell function to occur. This is why some people don't feel that great when they're around items that churn out a high amount of positive ions, such as appliances or Wi-Fi routers or, you know, anything that produces an appreciable amount of electricity, because it shifts that electrochemical gradient from negative 60 millivolts up towards negative 30 or negative 20. And so you limit the amount of ATP production and you limit normal cell function. You basically inhibit your mitochondria when you don't take into account that electrochemical gradient.
Right.
However, if you think of your body as a battery that you would want to keep properly charged, and you are doing a good job from an omission standpoint at, you know, not setting your computer on the dryer, for example. I don't know if anybody does this, and using it as a standing workstation as the dryer is running or something like that.
Right.
Or you know, having your Wi-Fi router just like directly underneath your computer while you're working, or plugged in next to your bed while you're asleep, and you're not holding your cell phone up to your head. And you're just generally aware, which I think a lot of people increasingly are these days, about the fact that these aren't just neutral devices,
right?
They actually do produce a charge.
Right.
And that charge does have an effect on the body. So if you've got all that in order, returning to the second part of your question about some of the lowest hanging fruit, then from an from a commission standpoint, there are certain things you can do to maintain that proper electrochemical gradient.
Right.
One of them being something you alluded to, minerals, right? Because those are charged particles that you can consume that allows the water in your body to maintain its normal electrochemical gradient. This would include very electrolyte-rich sea salts, although sea salts nowadays tend to be contaminated with things like microplastics, or, you know, and this would be an issue for men, especially who do not bleed on a monthly basis, iron. Those are the biggest two, microplastics and iron.
Right.
And that's why if you buy, you know, Himalayan pink sea salt, it's got a slight pink hue. Well, some of that is iron. It's not good necessarily. If you look at a mass spec analysis of all the different salts out there and you look at the lowest amount of contaminants and the highest amount of minerals, just the regular Celtic salt, like the stuff in the blue bag or the blue bottle that you get from the grocery store, slightly gray because it hasn't been bleached. Good flavor profile, high in minerals, but also low in contaminants. So that'll be one thing. Right? You use something like a Celtic salt on your food regularly. You add a few pinches to water at the beginning or the end of the day. There are also companies that sell mineral-enriched forms of water or mineral drops, like AquaTrue makes some really good trace mineral drops. There are companies like Oral IV, The Right Stuff. Those are two companies that
that's like Quinton, right? The vials.
Well, Quinton, I would consider to fall into that category of liquid electrolytes that you can buy, but very similar to how Celtic salt is at the top of the totem pole for salt. I believe it's pronounced Quinton, but it's Quinton.
Yeah.
Quinton is at the top of the totem pole for liquid electrolyte solutions. They harvest that from algal bloom in seawater, and then it goes through this very strict filtration process. You buy it in like a little ampule or a pouch or a packet. And I used to do the pinches of salt in my mason glass of water at the beginning and the end of the day.
Yeah.
And now I do a packet of that Quinton in my water at the beginning and the end of the day. And I travel with that as well. It has a lot of good benefits, but, you know, its primary benefit is maintaining that electrochemical balance.
Right.
So we've got the salts, we have the drinkable solutions. And then finally, we have anything that's grown in mineral-rich soil, which unfortunately, due to poor soil turnover practices in the U.S., is typically not from conventional produce. But, you know, for example, we have 6 raised garden beds at my house. Many people have patio gardens or backyard gardens, and you can buy minerals and add them to the soil.
Right.
You need to follow the instructions very carefully so you don't throw off the acidity and alkalinity of the soil. You can't just take an entire, like, you know, bag of minerals, 4 pounds, and dump them in your potter at the, you know, on your patio. But creating your own mineral-rich soil, or ensuring that the produce that you purchase is from a farm that has good soil turnover practices, like rotating crops, allowing soil to rest, remineralizing the soil, etc., all of those would allow you to charge your body's battery
right.
by getting adequate minerals. That's why the minerals would be important. Mm-hmm. You also asked me about other things that you could do to kind of like the lowest hanging fruit.
Yeah.
And most of them really are based on that concept of the body being a battery. So light. I already described how photons of light can help to charge that electrochemical gradient. This would be something like near-infrared or red light panels.
Right.
This would be, of course, sunlight being the very best because you have all spectrums of light, including, if you don't carry that genetic SNP I referred to earlier, mm-hmm. the UVB and the UVA,
yeah.
which would help out with vitamin D production. But even the absence of the vitamin D component, there's some evidence that that low-level radiation also has a hormetic effect on the body.
Right.
And I recently interviewed Matt Maruka on my podcast about mm-hmm. this idea of kind of building up a skin callus. And when you do that, you're getting all the circadian rhythmicity benefits of sunlight. And there's plenty of evidence showing that people who go to the beach on the weekend have a higher risk of skin cancer than workers who are out in the sun every day, right? Because your body will build up enough cellular resilience to lower your risk of skin cancer with regular, sane, repeated exposures to
right.
sunlight. So sunlight or light panels, I would consider, in addition to minerals, to be something that, in the case of sunlight, is free. Or in
right.
the case of these light panels, it's pretty easy to wrap your head around. You
yeah.
buy a Juve, or you know, hunt down a health clinic that has something like a Novathor bed, or mm-hmm. you know, anything you can do to increase your exposure to particularly infrared and red light. Infrared
right.
sauna,
right?
That would be another example. What else could you do to change that potential? Well, we know that the Earth emits a staggering amount of negative ions,
right.
particularly sand, the ocean,
right.
or any, this is kind of cool, anywhere that you are standing on the planet that is a contiguous amount of land where lightning has struck. So meaning if there's a
Holy
lightning
smokes.
Storm in Florida and you here in California see that there's a series of lightning storms in Florida, that's the time that you decide to go outside in your bare feet to read a book or lay on your back because basically all those negative ions that the Earth is getting charged with in North America, those travel at light speed, right?
Through
the entire planet.
Smokes.
So you can ground or you can earth. You can buy grounding shoes like plugs or earth runners, and you can wear those when you're out on a walk if you're walking somewhere where you can't be barefoot or you're
right.
going to a restaurant. You can even buy earthing and grounding mats.
Right.
You can travel with an earthing mat that you place under your sheet when you're in a hotel room. The
right.
the plug plugs into the grounding outlet. You know, it's a three-prong plug, so
right.
it's grounded.
Yeah.
So you're grounded with that. They also, the company Ultimate Longevity sells grounding patches, grounding mats,
Jesus.
Sleeping grounding pads. And by using technology like that, or
yeah.
going outside barefoot, or going outside with grounding shoes, or climbing trees, climbing rocks, swimming in the ocean, walking
right.
on the beach, making that a regular practice in addition to getting light and minerals would definitely fall into the category of charging the body.
Yeah.
And if I could name a few others, I mentioned water.
Yeah.
I am not convinced that structured water generators that make structured water that you drink allow the water to remain structured after you drink that water. But at the same time, there are some forms of water that would increase the potential of that water to charge the body. Hydrogen water would probably
right.
be the best example, like using hydrogen water tablets
mm-hmm.
or a hydrogen water enriching generator.
Right. right.
You could you know have that and put like quinton and hydrogen in a morning glass mason jar of water.
There we go.
And then repeat in the evening, and you've got hydrogen enriched, mineral rich water that you're charging your body with at the beginning and at the end of the day.
Right.
So we've got water and minerals, light, earthing / grounding. And then the other two things that actually can charge the body would be two things I know you regularly practice. We do at Runga. I regularly practice, and that would be heat and cold.
Right.
Regular exposure to warming the body up, which increases the electrical potential of the body, whether it's a sauna or whether it's I count a workout in the hot weather, right?
Right.
You know, I was sweating buckets in Gold's Gym this morning, right? I don't need to go to the sauna today. I just came back from Cabo where
right.
you know, I played tennis with my wife one afternoon and was drenched and you know, hung out with my kids on the beach one afternoon and was dressed
yeah.
up. You know, so anything like that, it doesn't have to be a sauna, just
right.
anything hot.
Right.
And then cold, same
yep.
thing. Cold shower, cold soaks,
yep.
Cold face dunks,
right.
Ice baths, even cryotherapy chambers. I was recently looking at the website of a new company called Morozco Forge that is making now ice tubs, big, beautiful stainless steel ice tubs done for you
yep.
that filter the water using ozone and UV.
Yep.
And I believe they use a little bit of H2O2, the hydrogen peroxide.
Yep.
And even in ambient temperatures of up to 110 degrees, keeps the water at 31 to 32 degrees Fahrenheit, meaning when you get into that water, there's actually a thin sheet of ice you have to break through to get in.
Dope.
And I'm eyeing one of those.
Yeah.
My wife gets pissed every time I introduce some new to the house, so,
well,
but you know that's another example of a very sexy kind of done for you way to get the cold. So coming full circle to respond to your question, even if you get sunlight, you may need vitamin D,
right?
Still from supplement and food forms. B, your body is a battery and you must keep it charged. And C, the best way to do that would be minerals, water, earthing, grounding. Heat, cold, and light.
Yeah, amazing. Thank you. So one thing that you mentioned was EMF, and I don't want to take a deep dive into this, but I wanted to share because I think it's low-hanging fruit just in terms of takeaways, and I'm curious on your thoughts on this. We unplug our router. We have it on a timer, but most of the time we'll unplug it if we're not using it.
Sure.
But I think a real low-hanging kind of thing that people should do is a lot of these Wi-Fi routers, they've got the 2.4G and the 5G network. Mm-hmm. Right. And we went in the other day and I just turned off the 5G mm-hmm. so that it's just not available. And I think that most of us, because the 5G, you've got to be really close to the router for it even to do anything. Mm-hmm. And I think that most of us are sitting bathing in 5G when we're using the 2.4 and leaving it plugged in overnight and everything else. And so for you, like what is somebody to do in terms of like, you know, this 5G thing that's coming down the hatch, and you know we're in LA right now and I'm pretty concerned about it, and I think it's, you know, there's a lot of people very fearful about 5G, and but I think like let's pretend that it's coming and there's nothing we can do about it. Like what do we do to like kind of mitigate some of the issues? Like what's mm-hmm. what are the easiest ways to kind of like sleep at night knowing?
Yeah, I mean, practical steps you've already alluded to. Proximity to the device will exponentially increase the exposure.
Right.
So as far as you can be from a router, as far as you can be, you know, especially in bedroom spaces from anything emitting those type of signals, the better.
I think they're going to be putting them like every four or five houses.
They will.
Like outside.
Will. Yeah, so you cannot fully escape, especially when you're in a place like LA.
Right.
Disabling 5G on your phone is something
right.
that's simple to do. That's that's Googleable for anyone. It's just go into your cell data settings.
Yep.
And you can adjust the 5G and turn that off. You can use a digital wall timer or simply unplug your router,
right.
Wi-Fi router at night. Or you can just keep the radio signal disabled on it at all times
right.
and plug into it with like
right.
a Cat 6 shielded Ethernet cable.
Right.
So that you just, you know, you can get 40, 60 foot long cables and just, you know, be plugged in just about anywhere.
So is part of the problem, sorry to jump in, Ben. So if my phone is not on 5G, right? Mm-hmm. So if I go into the settings and I turn off 5G, is it now more or less not attracting the signal? So in other words, let's say they put the 5G right. thing down the road. If I turn it off on my phone, am I basking in it the same way? Or did I get rid of the transmitter? Did I get rid of the thing that's basically calling the signal to me?
I don't know. I know your phone won't transmit a 5G signal.
Right.
But I do not know if the signal being generated by the devices out there in the telephone pole that are communicating with everyone else's devices
right.
are still going to be an issue. I would hazard a guess that they are less of an issue,
yeah.
but still an issue.
Right.
That's not a question that I know the answer to. The very, very best thing you can do, though, I already named, and that is grounding and earthing.
Right.
It is the number one way to mitigate the effects of specifically Wi-Fi and 5G radiation.
Right.
Grounding mat, grounding pad that you stand on while you're at work,
right,
outside barefoot. Earth runners, which are sandals with copper plugs built into the bottom of the sandal.
Right.
Plugs makes very similar footwear. Earth runners makes a kit that allows you to put those copper plugs into the bottom of any shoe.
Oh,
so if you have like some loafers or dress shoes or sport shoes that you want to outfit on Amazon, you can purchase these earthing and grounding bands that you simply wrap around any shoe. If you don't want to do that full outfitting with the copper plugs, you just wrap them around the shoe. And
that's amazing.
It. Just search for grounding straps on Amazon and you can get those. That's really the very best thing you can do is just keep that intimate connection with the planet Earth. Swim in the ocean if you're near the ocean, preferably as often as you can get in. You know, if you take a walk down to the ocean in the sunlight in the morning, jump in, swim around, walk back, that's perfect because you got sunlight, grounding, earthing, you know, movement, a lot of stuff that you're kind of stacking, a little bit of cold thermogenesis, you know, all at once. So
it's incredible how many people like live in Venice, California and never go to the beach. But I also think that, like, you know, earthing is this thing and the research is unbelievable. And, you know, people that know this stuff are really kind of screaming about earthing, but it's also something that I think the more sort of mainstream somebody is, like if my brother is a stockbroker and, you know, he's like, dude, like, you know, how do I get healthy? And it's like, dude, like go to Central Park and take your shoes. And he's like, what are you like? No, I need to like get my ass kicked. Like, what do you mean? I'm not going to.
Yeah. Plus there's goose shit in Central Park.
It's like the hardest thing to get people to believe in, I think.
Yeah. And I talk about this in my book a little bit that it's not out yet, but the one that I just wrote, Boundless.
Right.
There are certain compounds, you know, I talk about a lot of it because I just researched for so long in that book about what different compounds have what effects.
Right.
There are two plant-based compounds that negate much of the effects of specifically radiation-based inflammation, such as you would get when flying on an airplane. Maybe the shutter to the window is open, so you're getting a lot of solar radiation.
Right.
And when it's closed, you get some. Or what you'd get from a device, and that would be rhodiola. And astragalus.
Yeah.
And both of those, you know, you can buy organic rhodiola or astragalus on Amazon. And those powders, particularly if you're traveling a lot, you know, you're surrounded by a bunch of Wi-Fi signals in a hotel room or whatever, it's prudent to supplement with that type of thing.
Amazing. So, super cool, man. Yeah. Well, in your new book, the big theme is, would you say it's anti-aging?
No, it's energy.
It's energy.
I mean, the whole premise of the book is energy and having boundless energy at your beck and call whenever you need it. And I split the acquisition of that energy into three separate categories, the mind and the brain, covers everything from mold, mycotoxin, Lyme, cell danger response, nootropics, smart drugs, cognitive enhancing technologies and biohacks, supplements, different forms of fats and their ratios for the brain, for the mind. And then the body section covers, you know, some of the things we've been talking about, grounding, earthing, light, minerals, but then also exercise protocols, training protocols, you know, fitness, biohacks, just basically everything based on equipping the body for energy, including recovery, the immune system, sexual energy and sexual performance, just that whole body-based piece. And then, of course, because we know based on the teachings of folks like Bruce Lipton and Joe Dispenza and an increasing number of authors and researchers in the space of the link between emotions and biology, thought patterns and biology, values and beliefs and biology, that the spiritual disciplinary component is quite important as well.
Right.
And that's where I delve into practices of the blue zones, relationships, meditation, fasting, gratitude, silence, solitude, being with others, purpose in life, just unpack a lot of the stuff that I think is neglected in the health and fitness sector.
Right.
And so my purpose for the book was for it to basically be, you know, kind of a done for you manual, a 4-hour body on steroids, if you will, on all things you can do to have the boundless energy that I think everybody deserves. When I turned it into the publisher, it was over 1,200 pages. And it got turned down by all the big New York publishing houses because they want that flash in the pan, 200 or 300 pound book or 200 page book, you know, where there's nothing in there that someone would not be able to mispronounce. And it's all highly palatable. You could read the book in 5 days or one day if you wanted to. But this book, even trimmed down, wound up at 608 pages. So it's this big, beautiful hardcover.
So who the hell
diagrams,
published it?
Illustrations, Victory Belt, the same publisher my former book, Beyond Training. They're cool because they give the author a lot of say over the text, the font, and the graphics and the size. You know, when I say, this is, you know, a 608 page book, and it's got like a $60 price point,
right?
You know, and it's going to be hard to ship to conferences because a box of those books might have 8, whereas a box of a normal book would have like 30,
right?
But I wanted to publish a book that I want to read. Like, I want my book to be an experience,
right?
You know, something I'm still digesting maybe a year after I get the book, you know, rather than it just being a flash in the pan title. So,
and is it a little bit like Beyond Training in that, like, it's not necessarily like a start to finish thing,
right? Like, it's kind of like a cookbook. It's like, it's cold and flu season, so I'm flipping to the immune section. I mean, there's literally like over 25 different strategies in just the immune section alone for enhancing, you know, killer T cell production
and,
you know, recovering from a cold more quickly, making yourself more bulletproof to, you know, infections and immune system assailants while traveling on an airplane or you know, in large crowds. So it is kind of a choose your own adventure type of book.
It's awesome. And in terms of health, and you mentioned, you know, fulfillment, purpose, relationships, I think this is an area that a lot of people, you know, it's funny because a lot of people these days, you know, we want to live forever. We want to do all the anti-aging tricks, but we're not doing these other things. So it's kind of funny. I saw a quote the other day in a mindfulness book that was like, you know, people want to live forever, but they don't know what to do with themselves on a rainy Sunday. Mm-hmm. And so when we think about like the impact of those things on our health, you know, can you kind of dive into physiologically, and you mentioned Bruce Lipton that I know does a lot of this, physiologically, when we invest ourselves in a relationship, when we sit with ourselves and we seek that sort of highest fulfillment, or we really kind of navigate, I know you're big on knowing your life's purpose, like at the, you know, at the drop of a hat, how does this sort of impact our health? And then if you could, and this might be far-fetched, is how does that impact how we experience time? Mm-hmm. Because I think that one of the issues with nobody having enough time is, to your first thing, is their energy production's down. And I think the harder it is for your body to produce energy, the worse relationship you have with time, right? But I think that when we kind of get into these things and we start to find our purpose, it's time, I think we end up getting more of it, right? It feels, a day feels longer.
You're more selective and purposeful and mindful of your decisions. Particularly, you don't engage in decisions that do not effectively pass through the filter that you've set up.
Right.
Meaning, if you have decided that your most important variable in life is not your income, and perhaps is and everyone's going to be different in what they find important, and at different stages of your life, different things will be important. But let's say my filter, my predominant filter right now, is that every decision I make is heavily impacted by whether or not that deepens my relationship with my boys, River and Taryn. And so if you look at my upcoming 2020 calendar and the rest of 2019, there's very little I'm doing that does not involve my boys, deepening the relationship with them, taking them with me to different conferences and putting together experiences for them while I'm there, you know, going on hunting courses with them, setting up my day so that every day has these different amounts of time that I'm spending with them, reading books, selecting books that I know specifically contain knowledge that I want to pass on to them or that I will be able to give them to read with all of the pages that I folded over and underlined, even if they don't read the whole thing.
Right.
Flip to the pages that Daddy folded over and check out some of the things I underlined, almost like I'm reading the book for them and then passing on the most important things to them. Right. So that's an example of a filter that allows me to very easily say no when someone says, oh, you want to come, whatever. You know, we put together this big, beautiful conference, so we want to you know, pay you money to come and hang out here and lecture on something, and you know, your family's not welcome, like your wife can't come, or you know, or this isn't a family event. Well, then it's a question of, well, I don't know, is it going to be recorded? Could I show this to my boys at a later time? Like,
so
the idea is that once you've clearly identified your purpose and what's most important to you. And there are books that help you do this, like, in my book, I have a whole section on how to identify your purpose, but like Mastin Kipp has a great book about how to identify your purpose in life. I forget, it's called Claim Your Power is the name of that book. And it's like a 40-day process of identifying what it is that you like to do when you were a kid and what makes time just flow for you when you're in that alpha wave state of extreme productivity. You know, as Mark Manson, a popular author, says, you know, doing the things that make you forget to eat and forget to poop.
Right.
You know, you identify that single succinct purpose statement.
Right.
That, like I mentioned, may change from time to time or month to month, but you use that as a filter, and all of a sudden you find yourself saying hell no to a lot more activities and hell yes to the activities that really matter. Right. And time frees up because you're focused on the activities that really matter. I mean, to be honest with you, I put all of my fiction writing on hold for a little while because I realized that what truly mattered to me was this new book I'm working on. I just wanted extreme focus on that book, right? So I said no to a bunch of conferences. I said no to my fiction writing. And, you know, essentially my creative outlet right now is music, because from a personal standpoint, you know, my filter is, okay, what's going to bring me closer to being able to record my first album? Which I'm actually doing this Saturday down here in LA.
Amazing.
Just a little 3-song album, but I'm recording it, right?
Yeah.
So and then you know, what allows me to spend more time with my kids and to complete this other book project for Boundless. And so ultimately, clear, succinct purpose combined with energy is what really allows you to have that affluence of time and be in a flow state rather than in a reactive checklist state the entire day.
Right.
Right. I got to check this off because this person asked me about this, and I replied to this email and told this person, sure, I'd write the foreword to their whatever book. And,
right.
You know, and then I'm going to do this meetup. And so yeah, I mean, it's very easy, especially in LA, to just get, you know, look at the end of your day. And as Benjamin Franklin would do at the end of each of his days, ask myself, what good have I done this day? And when you think about it, it's like, oh, well, not really much. You know, I just engaged in a bunch of conversations, but didn't really contribute towards my purpose in life.
Right.
So replying to your question backwards, that was the part about time and the affluence of time that a succinct purpose in life gives you because of your ability to say no to so much and right. focus on the things that you really should be focusing on. From an epigenetic standpoint, we know that the expression of genes, whether those are genes that would enable you to have positive adaptations, such as genes responsible for mitochondrial proliferation or muscle growth or you know, T cell production or anything like that, that those can be expressed. We know that negative genes, such as a gene that would be responsible for decreasing cell receptor sensitivity to insulin or increasing potential for carcinogenicity of breast tissue or anything like that, those can also be expressed. And we know that the brain is kind of like the master programmer of the body, can affect which of those genes are expressed based on specifically the level of stress that you're under. And there's a very good book called The Healing Code. And The Healing Code kind of goes into how just about every chronic disease really is, it's an epigenetic response to stress is what it is. It's genes being expressed that are the genes that are kind of like the weakest place you fall into based on what your thought patterns happen to be
right
at that time, which is why we know, you know, years and years of anger, for example, in Chinese traditional medicine, and we see this now in Western medicine, and profile of mood state scores can result in bone cancer, right? That's where right. we tend to store anger.
Interesting.
You know, and there's even a Bible verse that says something like, you know, anger rots the bones or something like that. And they even had like this ancient wisdom back then that there's some kind of a link between, you know, anger and hatred and rage and pent up emotions and,
right.
and bone cancer. We know the same thing for sexual frustration and prostate right. cancer. You know,
right.
It's very interesting how a lot of these beliefs and emotions are related to specific biological outcomes. And not only that, but this is multi-generational, right? We know that folks who are of Jewish ancestry, whose ancestors went through the Holocaust, have hyperactive sympathetic nervous system responses to stress because that was actually built in, you know, over
right.
over years, you know, this generational response to stress. We know the same thing for like mothers who are highly stressed during pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
They can tend to have children who have a higher propensity for type 2 diabetes because their livers are so good at amping up their response to glucagon and dumping a bunch of glucose into the bloodstream
right.
to run from a lion, which seems unfair because it was mommy that was stressed, not the baby, but the baby's kind of carrying on what it was that occurred from mom. And a very powerful way to think about this, and this is the way I think about my own sons, River and Taryn, is you're not raising your children, you're raising your grandchildren. I think about that. You're not raising your children, you're raising your grandchildren, because you teach your children everything from the time that you do or do not spend with them at the dinner table and with, you know, bedtime rituals at night, to the traditions that you set up for Thanksgiving or Christmas, to whether or not you have your phone out and kind of like next to you when you're reading them a book at night, and you occasionally like reach for it when it dings and check the message, then get back to the book,
right?
Or the presence that you have with them when you're, you know, throwing a baseball or a football around in the backyard. Everything that you do with them is exactly how they're going to raise their kids, most likely. It's very difficult for those cycles to be broken.
Right.
And, you know, nowadays people are breaking those cycles. They're using things like, you know, plant medicine and release of trauma and, you know, realization that there are things that they can fix in their lives that were passed on to them by their parents that they don't have to pass on to their children. But largely, you know, the way that you live from a health standpoint, the way that you raise your children from a lifestyle standpoint, all of that gets passed on. And so this idea that your thoughts and beliefs and emotion patterns affect your health is not just you, you know, it's your kids and your kids'
right.
kids. And so this is, you know, why emotions impact legacy. You know, thoughts and belief patterns impact legacy. And it's also, from an empowering standpoint, very cool to think about the fact that you and I sitting here have the potential to change the world based on the time and the quality of relationship that we devote to our children or to the younger generation that we happen to be spending time with.
Hey guys, sorry to interrupt, but I have one more Black Friday special for you, and it's from Brain FM. Now, just head to brain.fm/stacked or use code STACKED at checkout on Black Friday only. That's November 29th, and you're going to save 35% on an annual membership. Do not miss this opportunity. I've told you guys all about Brain FM on previous episodes. It is my go-to hack before a podcast, to deepen my sleep, to meditate. It's an incredible app that is absolutely worth a couple of dollars a month. It's a game changer. So check it out at brain.fm/stacked. Right, man. And I think that's incredible. I was thinking when you were talking, I was reading the other day that fathers today have reportedly not enough time with their kids, and right, there's this whole time piece, but fathers today actually have three times more time with their kids than they did in 1965. Mm-hmm. And so I think that comes back to that idea of presence and the idea that if your phone is dinging over there, you know, I think a big
right.
part of it is, you know, there's fewer sort of barriers up. We used to leave work at work. We don't anymore. And there's also more competing for every minute. right? So what other sort of nuggets do you have for parents or fathers specifically? I think that you're raising your grandkids is a brilliant sort of way to live your life and to raise your kids. And I'm assuming you've probably got a couple more of those. What other advice would you give fathers or mothers that are raising kids? Because I think that's, as it relates to health and wellness, I think that's a huge piece right now. Mm-hmm. When they go to school, they, you know, what are they going to do when they're confronted with like bad food or cell phones? You know, I don't want my kid to be the only kid without a cell phone, even though I don't want him to have a cell phone because I don't want him to get Instagram. And how does this, your kids are now 9 or 10
or 11.
11. So yeah. Where's your head at as they're kind of heading into that age?
I'm going to give you three things.
Great.
So the first is this idea of love and logic style of parenting. Mm-hmm. And there are books by that same name that teach you that the most important thing that you can do when it comes to the quote rules unquote that you set up for your house is to educate your children about the consequence of any decision that they're going to make and then let them make the decision rather than setting up forbidden fruit,
right?
Or saying, no, you can't do that. No, you can't eat that. No, you can't watch that. No, you can't spend that much time on the screen.
Right.
Which is shockingly still to me the way that most parents raise their kids. No, 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 no. And by the time the child reaches adolescence, all they want to do is just go off the deep end and go explore all these things that they weren't allowed to do because they lived such almost like
sheltered.
A
sheltered.
Yeah, it's almost like a lazy form of parenting. It's easier to say no than to teach. It's easier to say don't eat gluten than to explain to your child the way that a gluten protein is built and how large it is and difficult to digest and what happens if that's combined with glyphosate, which would then increase the permeability of the gut barrier and allow what would normally be a less harmful protein to actually pass intact into the bloodstream and cause neural inflammation and brain fog and poor sleep and, you know, all these issues. That's hard to do. But when you do that, which is what I do, you can then say to your child, so that's gluten. That's gluten. When you have gluten that's got glyphosate in it, which is what you're going to find in most packaged wheat products in the U.S., now you make the decision if you want to have gluten cupcake at your kid's birthday party. And, oh, by the way, you know, there's this enzyme called dipeptidylpeptidase that will pre-digest gluten for you. And so here's also, I'll leave some of this gluten guardian out in the kitchen counter. And you just make your decisions, kid, and go live your life.
Yeah.
And they're not going to go freaking like whatever, sneak 4 cupcakes at Jimmy's birthday party because dad never lets them have gluten. So this is their one chance. And when they're 14, they're not going to, like I did, steal the bottle of bourbon from dad's desk and go get drunk in their bedroom because they were never allowed to taste alcohol or taught about the impact of alcohol on a young developing liver or anything like that, right? So, sure, when your child is a baby, you want to not let them go plant their hand on the burning stove. You don't want some, you know, toddler walking around with third-degree burns. And there are situations where you just say no, you know, but mm-hmm. but, you know, there are certain situations in which you want a child to be able to live with the consequences of their decision,
right?
Like, you know, be careful riding your bicycle that fast down the driveway. You know, if it falls over, here's what might ensue, and then let them take the tumble if they want to learn the hard way.
Yeah.
So that's called the love and logic style of parenting. Equip your child with the knowledge of the consequences of their decision and then let them make the decision.
Yeah.
That's been very helpful for Jess and I, and there are no rules in our house for screen time or anything like that. But one thing that's important to realize is that if that's the way that you parent, you have to be the example.
Right.
When there is downtime in our house, mom and I are reading a book, or mom is quilting or knitting or painting, and I'm playing the guitar, or I'm outside plant foraging and walking in the forest, or I'm exercising. There really isn't any time spent on Netflix. We aren't hunched over our devices in the living room. So our kids don't see that, and therefore that's not where they go when there's downtime for them. They're up in their beds reading Harry Potter, right? Just because that's what they're surrounded with, right? So you have to understand you can't parent with the love and logic style, then go off yourself and be whatever, mowing down a peanut butter and jelly sandwich at the kitchen counter while you're watching Netflix and tell your son, no, 15 minutes of screen time and don't eat gluten, right? Yeah. Like you just can't do that. You have to practice what you preach. So the love and logic style of parenting is one. Another is this idea that, as Yuval Noah Harari dictates in his new book, 21 Lessons for the 21st Century, the best worker and thinker and employee of the future is one who is equipped to be resilient and creative on the fly when their job is replaced by automation and artificial intelligence. They haven't been trained so long to put a square peg in a square hole and a round peg in a round hole that they just have absolutely no clue what to do when life throws curveballs at them.
Right.
The surgeon whose job is replaced by a robot who can do that surgery much better, if they are raised with the idea that, you know, life is something that teaches you through experiences and not through something like, you know, test taking and, you know, standing in line and learning at the same pace as everyone in the classroom and jumping off the cliff that everyone else jumps off like lemmings, they might go on to discover the cure for cancer rather than throwing up their hands and be like, oh shit, now I gotta just, you know, quit my job and go you know, hold a cardboard sign on the side of the street for beer. Right. So this idea is that you engage your children with the ability to be able to learn through life experiences. And that might mean, you know, very similar to the way that we raise our kids, whether they're in school or not, there's a great deal of unschooling that occurs, right? Like you take the math concepts that they're learning from the book and you help them to build a tree fort or, you know, or fix a bicycle or, you know, learn the diameter of a wheel or the structure of a room. How much paint do we need to be able to repaint your bedroom? You basically take anything that they would have learned from a book, which is the worst way to learn, and instead teach them how to learn that through life experiences, right? Mm-hmm. Our kids built a tree fort for math. Their chemistry is cooking in the kitchen. Like they have a food podcast, right?
Yeah.
It's called Go Greenfields, and they and they cook and they meet with chefs and they learn a ton about chemistry and measurements and, you know, the metric system and, you know, all of these different tools that allow them to apply physics and chemistry in a very experiential way.
Right.
There's a great book called Unschooling to University that, again, whether or not your children are in a traditional school or a private school or a public school or homeschooled or unschooled, kind of shows you how to do things like, you know, and engage your children with travel and life experiences and local community classes and train them through life and a life-based education and an experience-based education rather than a book and test-taking and highly predictable education, because the current educational structure that the lion's share of countries still use, although there are some like Finland, for example, that do not, it's based around a style of education that originated in the agricultural revolution and the era of industry, where you wanted good little factory workers and people who could stand in line and, you know, be all lined up in a row, you know, basically, you know, fabricating something in a factory or whatever. And almost all of that is being replaced by machines. We no longer need to educate and raise machines. We need to educate and raise very creative, resilient, free-thinking people who are going to who are not going to act like an automaton or a robot, but who instead are going to bounce back very quickly in a rapidly changing world.
Right.
So, you know, consider weaving some of these unschooling and life experience-based concepts. Look at every single opportunity from navigating through an airport or a subway to communicating with someone who might speak a different language to figuring out how to paint a room or build an object to the things that we'd normally just, you know, from a traditional educational standpoint, be trying to learn from a book,
right?
Like go teach your kid how to order via Spanish at a Mexican restaurant rather than sit there going through Spanish flashcards at a kitchen table, right? You got to teach them to use this stuff in life. And then in addition to love and logic style parenting and an experiential-based learning process, I would say the final piece, and my wife has been integral in teaching this to me, would be tradition and the importance of tradition. Children thrive on tradition. It makes them feel safe. It makes them feel cared for. It gives them hope and dependency when they know what's going to happen at Thanksgiving and what's going to happen at Christmas and what kind of Easter egg hunt do we do on Easter, or what are our bedtime traditions, our mealtime traditions. This returns to you raising your grandchildren, not your children, right? I grew up in a house where December 1st would roll around. Everybody was just like, well, what are we going to do for Christmas this year? Are we going to do Subway sandwiches or a turkey? Yeah. Are we going to open presents on Christmas Eve or in the morning?
Right.
You know, are we going to go out and get our tree at this farm or that farm, or maybe buy one from the mall parking lot? Yeah. My wife's family, it was like to the T. Like, yeah, we start Christmas Eve at 6 p.m. on the 24th, and there's this amazing cornucopia of kind of like the same foods year after year on the table, and we all watch this old Christmas movie, and we hide the pickle in the tree, and, you know, the kid who finds the pickle first gets to open the first present of Christmas,
right.
And, you know, we wake up at 6 a.m., and we gather around, we read the Christmas story, and then we all sing a song together, and then we open Christmas presents one by one as each person kind of, like, gets their Christmas present handed to them by the person that got it for them. And then we have this amazing Christmas lunch afterwards, and then go out sledding. And kids absolutely love that.
Yeah.
They thrive on it. And that, and that's like, you know, in my wife's maiden name is Casebolt. That's like the Casebolt family Christmas tradition.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the Greenfellow, what the hell do we do this year?
Yeah.
You know, and and kids just thrive on that. And it gets passed on from generation to generation. It creates like this almost like this strong nuclear family, and this idea that, you know, there are things that you just fall back on, and kids just, I've watched my own boys. They absolutely love it. Like, they know, they know what the traditions are. Every time a holiday rolls around, they know at dinner time, right? There is no phone. There's no computer. It's not like, what do we watch tonight at dinner? It's like, you know, We all gather together. We all take a deep breath in through our nose and out through our mouth three times. Dad says grace. We all go through our gratitude journals for that day. Everybody gets a chance to talk about their day. We play a board game. We all help clean up after dinner. We go upstairs to their bedroom. I play them a song. I read them a story. They, again, the love and logic style parenting, they can go to sleep whenever they want, right? They can stay up reading until 1 a.m. if they want. Yeah. They just know they might not feel that great the next day. You know, and then we flip off the lights, and, you know, mom and I go into the bedroom, and, you know, we read and we talk. And so there's just like daily traditions, seasonal traditions, you know, and that's really important for kids too, this idea of tradition.
I think that's amazing. We just started an annual tradition of Christmas going to Iceland. Iceland in that season is just so amazing.
And I can imagine.
It was so funny. We went last year, and I was like, we're going to do this every year. And then this year rolled around and was like, I kind of want to do something else. I'm like, we started an annual tradition. This is year two.
I'm booking the flights. The only problem with Christmas in Iceland is you're eating the reindeer, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I guess that's a kind
might
of an
upset
irony.
Upset my children. Yeah. Merry Christmas. Here, chew on some Rudolph while you unpack your stocking.
Hey, if I had some reindeer pate right here, you wouldn't be.
It's good stuff.
You'd be pretty down.
It's super omega 3 rich too.
Right.
Like any of those cold mammals, like,
oh,
their meat,
Lord,
is so omega 3 dense.
Well, they only kill 150 a year.
Wow.
So in Iceland, you know, there's, and every night there was a different animal, and it was a very traditional thing, right? Like, there was the reindeer pate. There was these birds that are, you know,
puffins,
something. I don't think they're puffins, but some kind of bird that I ate a little bit of. Didn't really do too much of it, but the reindeer pate, Amelia's dad was telling me, you know, they kill 150 of these things a year, so it's very much it's a delicacy, right? It's like, if you get your hands on some of that,
it is kind of weird. I remember when I went there, they eat like whales and rare birds and reindeer and shit.
Yeah.
But it's
awesome.
Tasty.
New Year's is insane. Yeah. So, hey, and I think one of the things you mentioned about what I took from it was this sort of creating a lot of self-reliance in your kids, right? And I think that's so important. But I think that's important for adults too, you know? And I think that ironically, one of the sort of things that I try to help people do the most is reduce stress in their life. And when I was hearing what you were saying, it's like, in many ways, you're reducing that kid's sort of, you're reducing the number of things dramatically that actually would stress this boy out, right? And I think that nowadays, even adults, you know, we get in the car, we're going to the grocery store that we go to three times a week, and we're going to use GPS because what if there's traffic? And, you know, so I think that seeking these things out in your daily life, even as an adult, I think is incredibly important. because you're basically creating a scenario where you are a little more self-reliant and you have less that can stress you out. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. That is the idea of cellular resilience can be had in a twofold manner.
Right.
Number one would be hormetic stressors, like the heat, like mm-hmm. the cold, like the radiation that we talked about earlier.
Right.
Like exercise, you know, doing the hard thing. Yep. And there are even some people who sleep on the floor instead of in beds to increase their biomechanical resilience, like yeah. Katie Bowman up in Seattle. I don't go quite that far, but this idea of always asking yourself at some point during the day, like, have I done something that increased my cellular resilience? And then in terms of resilience to stress and the ability to be able to keep the parasympathetic nervous system activated in response to sympathetic stressors, nothing beats meditation and breath work.
Right.
And as far as equipping yourself to be able to navigate this increasingly complex and frustrating and stressful world that we live in, if you have a breath work and a meditation practice, there's nothing. Well, I would say the only thing, and this is controversial, that I think is higher on the totem pole than meditation and breath work is a belief in a higher power, right? For me, that's incredibly powerful. For me to know that if shit hits the fan, we're not a bunch of chunks of flesh and blood floating through a rock on this planet trying to see who can fuck the most or who can make the most money or get the biggest house or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a special story written out for our lives, and there's a big guy in the sky watching out for us. And, you know, every step is mapped out for us. And when things are going south, I can actually call on that higher power and actually pray and cast my cares on God. And although I realize many people may not have been, you know, raised with the concept of there being a higher power or that we live in this spiritual dimension, I mean, I can tell you beyond a shadow of a doubt, especially via plant medicine experiences, there is no doubt in my mind after going deep in plant medicine, having experienced God in a very powerful light and love-based presence right there in the room with me. You know, I believe even more powerfully than I do now, not that everyone needs to use plant medicine to find God, but that there is a God and that God is very powerful and full of love and light. And whether we see that God or not, he is around us and protecting us. And if we place our hope in him and pray to him for power or guidance or direction, or I'm stuck in traffic, I have a meeting in 15 minutes, Waze says it's going to take me 45 minutes to get there. Deep breath in through the nose, out through the mouth. Rely upon those practices and skills that you learned via meditation, and then even say a prayer. Hey, God, I know everything's going to be all right. Please make sure that, you know, person XYZ, you know, just fill them with your comfort, fill me with your peace, make whatever happen that you decide to happen in this scenario happen. Yeah. And that hope that you get from that, I think, is a pretty big part of resilience as well.
Right. And I think that a lot of people need to hear that. And I think that, you know, a lot of people are, I think, religion or being religious, people that say that they are religious, I think that number is coming down. But I think people are increasingly spiritual. So when somebody says the word God and they're listening to this and maybe they don't identify as being, you know, religious, like, where do they sort of begin? Because I think there's a little bit, if you have a certain idea of what this means, I think that there's this sort of internalized barrier to entry into this idea. But I think people desperately need it. So where do they start?
It's so simple. Really, there's only two things I would recommend people
this
do.
Side of ayahuasca.
Right. Sugar. Right. 5-MeO-DMT. It's very simple. Inhale and hold on for a wild 15-minute ride and you're good. You simply believe.
Right.
There's a God. I mean, it's that simple. It's like, okay, God, I believe you exist. Boom. And like something as simple as that, all of a sudden you just like it's weird to explain, but if you do that and you truly believe it, all of a sudden you just like feel like that, like you just been knocked on your ass by this weird realization that holy cow, I'm not alone.
Right.
Like just something as simple as that, God, I believe you exist. Like in my heart, I truly believe that you exist. And that is the first step. It is that simple. And then step two, and I know there are a lot of religious texts out there, but I would say that for me, the most powerful has been the Bible, just like owning that and being able to just flip it open and read. It's crazy. This sounds like magic, but I do believe the world is a magical place. I think it's more fun to live your life as part of like this great Tolkien-esque like story for your life, where there are, you know, hobbits and dragons and wizards, and the world is just like this very powerful magical place. To me, that's a fun way to live instead of binary zeros and ones. And based on that, sometimes if you just have something like a Bible and you open it and you start reading, you know, whether you're following some reading schedule or whether you're, you know, you really believe in magic and you just like flip it open, you're like, all right, whatever I'm supposed to read today is gonna be right there in front of me. There's always something that speaks to you. Right? There's always something that speaks to you. Even if you have like one of those little Gideon Bibles next to your bedside, or, you know, some big study Bible that you travel with. I mostly travel these days with a gratitude journal. Admittedly, in full disclosure, it's one that I wrote and published, called the Christian Gratitude Journal. But all I did was choose, me and my mom did this together. We chose over 100 of our favorite little verses, like the inspirational ones, the uplifting ones, the ones that you read. And it's like, you know, and a lot of times I don't have my Bible when I travel. I just have that with all those Bible verses. And I just, you know, I was in there this morning. I read it, and the verse was something like, you know, your steps will be chosen for you, or the path will be carved for you. You just follow the path. You do the best that you can with whatever is put on your plate for that day. And then you just have faith, and you take that day step by step. And no matter what happens, have the faith that you're going in the right direction, and that you're being guided in the right direction. You know, for me, it's a cool way to start the day. And so I just read that verse, and then you reply to three questions. What am I grateful for? What truth did I discover in what I read this morning? That little verse at the top of the page.
Right.
And then, rather than a daily affirmation, like, you know, me, I'm
stronger, I'm better looking,
good, I'm great, I'm wonderful, gosh darn it, people like me. It is, who is one person who I can pray for or help or serve today?
Right.
Who is one person I can pray for? And you just, that first person that comes, maybe it's not somebody you can help. Maybe it's freaking like, you know, grandma 3,000 miles away, and you're just going to like say a quick prayer for her, or call her on the phone energy. Maybe.
Yeah.
Or maybe it really is, all right, I know my neighbor's right in the middle of moving. I know I have a super busy day. I'm going to walk up to their house and just like help them with 5 boxes. Right in the back of the U-Haul or whatever, something very small like that, and significant. And you can create an avatar too. You can be like, I'm going to help one homeless person.
Right.
I'm going to buy one coffee for one person that looks like they can't afford it, they really need it, they're cold on the sidewalk, and that's it. But if you think about it that way, 365 days a year, you're doing at least one good work, right? You're never going to lay in bed again, Benjamin Franklin style, asking yourself, what good have I done this day, and drawing a blank slate.
Right.
There's at least one thing that you will have done to have helped at least one person.
And I think that's an incredible practice, to be honest, for sleep. I find that when I write down at the end of the day the things I did, the good I did, I will sleep better that night, because you close the book on all these open-ended things that are just flying through your brain.
And so, I mean, like that is a practice that I engage in, dwelling on my day with my eyes closed at the end of the day. I like to do the 4-8 breathwork protocol, count in, 8 count out, because you activate that sympathetic nervous system. You begin to retain some carbon dioxide.
Right.
You shift your body into parasympathetic mode. But so many people, it's like, okay, here's how most people fall asleep. Going to take CBD, melatonin, GABA, maybe some kind of diazepam, maybe take a few hits on the vape pen, and then I'm just going to dink around on Instagram until I get really sleepy.
Yeah.
And then I'm
you got your blue blockers on.
And I'm going to fall asleep. I got my blue blockers on. And it's like, no. I mean, yeah, maybe you need, and like a lot of people as they age, they need melatonin. You know, I use CBD. I think CBD helps me tremendously. But you put down the phone and you simply lay there, like in the dark, 4-8 breathing, thinking about your day.
Right.
And the cool thing is that, and I talked about this with Peter Martone when I interviewed him about the limbic system and the relationship to sleep, is when you think, so you don't think to the future, like, what am I going to do tomorrow? What's going on in the morning? What I got to be up for?
Right.
Like, all that stuff keeps you awake. But if you think back, like, what did I have for breakfast this morning? And how'd that conversation go, you know, at lunch and maybe even the day before? And like, he gets even as complex as thinking back to like something cool I did when I was 12 years old, right? Like, he goes deep into the limbic system, but it's amazing like how fast you can lull yourself to sleep. And I think it's because it keeps you from future thinking,
right,
while you're trying to fall asleep.
Right.
And you don't worry about the future, right? You just lay there, think about the past, think about the good things that you've done that day.
Right.
Some 4-8 breathing. And it's a very cool way to fall asleep.
Well, I mean, that's definitely, I think that's brilliant. And I think that, you know, when I think about, again, I've been spending a lot of time looking at time as a sort of variable in our life that our relationship changes based on our age, the stress that we're under, what we have on our plate. And I think when we look back like that, A, we're definitely using parts of the brain. B, we're going to have fond memories that we're going to put a smile on our face. And we're creating a scenario where we're actually appreciating the time we've had on this planet instead of fearing
right
the next morning, which I think is brilliant.
That's actually the way that a lot of those medicines like ketamine and MDMA work, that they're so popular for PTSD and trauma now, is they actually really like tap into that limbic system and remember shit that you have just suppressed.
Right.
You know, then you release that, you integrate, you walk through it. And that's accessing the limbic system on steroids.
Right. It's amazing. One of the things, I use your app. You've got the Nature Beat HRV app, and I'll put my sleep mask on. And I'll do some box breathing, whatever I'm doing, but I'll actually have your app and it's real time. And until I'm parasympathetic, sometimes I'll use the heart math thing.
Yeah.
I'll actually, if I'm feeling stressed, then I'll do the brain FM, whatever I need to do to get myself parasympathetic before I go to sleep seems to be also, and sometimes it takes a while.
Yeah, you can watch your HRV in real time. That one also has a breath pacer on it.
Right.
I do it in the morning.
You don't want to look at the screen.
I don't want to look at the screen. I don't want to fumble around with the chest strap that you wear. Like, for me, it's like as stripped down as that evening ritual can be as possible, the better. But it's a good idea.
Right.
This idea of at some point using real-time HRV feedback to actually – it's essentially just a form of biofeedback, right? You are gathering real-time information about your body and then kind of like steering your body via breath work and other patterns to shift that one direction or another. True biofeedback or neurofeedback would involve that occurring subconsciously,
right,
you know, with electrodes attached to your head, and you know, you don't even know which way you're straying in terms of alpha or beta brain waves. You're just getting this subconscious slap on the wrist when whatever, you know, usually it's a game like a spaceship, and the spaceship will stop flying when you get into beta brain wave zone.
I spend a lot of time.
You can't really consciously control it. You're instead just looking at the spaceship, and your body starts to do, it's weird to explain, but your body just starts to do what it's supposed to do anyways. But this is more like conscious biofeedback, where you're consciously engaging in breathing patterns, your thought patterns that cause your HRV to drift up or low.
Right. I think that's, and that's the name of the game, right? Because what I was mentioning there, as you kind of do this, let's say, you know, for a week, I spend doing that, and maybe I do it every so often when I'm feeling particularly stressed. But when you spend time doing that sort of feedback, and even if you are kind of doing it and occasionally using your phone to fall asleep, it's fueling your intuition. So now I know it can take me 20 to 25 minutes to really get into that place. And now I don't need my phone anymore.
Which is why if you want to sleep 8 hours, you often need to be in bed. A lot of people hate to hear this, like 8.5, 9 hours.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
That's why a lot of people hear 8 hours of sleep and like, I can never quite hit 8 hours. I'm in bed from 10 to 6. It's like, no, you go in bed from like 9:30 to 6:30 to get 8 hours of sleep.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, yeah. Sleep is huge. So back where this started, and I think, you know, the funny thing about this podcast is you must have mentioned 30 books on this podcast.
Yeah, I read a lot. As a matter of fact, I don't even consider myself to be an author as much as a transmitter of information that I've gathered from other, like when I write, I'm essentially just synopsizing, very similar to how I'll fold over a bunch of pages in a book, then hand it off to my kids. They don't need to read the whole book. They just read the pages I folded over. A lot of times when I'm writing, and I mean Boundless, it almost annoyed my publisher because they're like, you realize after someone buys this book, there's like 300 other books you mentioned. I'm like, yeah, but they don't have to read those books. Those are just like if they
– yeah.
I told them the best stuff from the books, but then if they want to take a deeper dive, they can go read those books. Like if you heard that every chronic disease is based on stress, great. Right. You get the idea. If you really want to get into the weeds, go read The Healing Code, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it kind of depends on how deep a dive you want to take.
Right. So back where we started, I was on a podcast and they decided to ask me, you know, how does Ben do it? So when you talk about a God and you as whatever it is you do a lot of things. And I think a lot of people look at you and they ask that question, like, how the hell does this guy do it? And I think when you were talking about being a parent, you're like, I'm putting my fiction writing on hold and I play guitar at night. And people out here are like, how the hell does this guy have time to write at all? Like, you know, I wish I had time to write a fiction novel and have time to decide not to anymore. And so I think what you're saying, and people hopefully take this away, is that these evening routines, this belief in a highly higher power, these are the kind of keys to being Ben Greenfield in many ways. But I imagine you also understand, or maybe I guess I'm putting words in your mouth, but I think you were gifted in a way that allows you to read and comprehend in a way that a lot of people don't have the ability, right? Or how do you feel like the gifts that you've been given have made you who you are? And for somebody that maybe is looking up to you and I don't want those people to be, if people set you as sort of like, I want to be like that guy, do you feel like you've been gifted with any particular skills that allow you to be something that other people would have a very hard time becoming?
But there was a time when I would have said no. Mm-hmm. You can be anything you want to be, right. Anything. But the fact is, you might be 5'2 and have a really poor vert and an endomorph body shape. And as bad as you want to be the next Michael Jordan, you just can't.
Right.
But you might at the same time have this amazing amount of left and right brain hemispheric coordination inside that 5'2 endomorphic body that allows you to be an amazing engineer.
Right.
Or an absolutely stellar author or problem solver, because you can integrate and aggregate solutions to complex problems. Mm-hmm. And everybody has a unique skill set. Right. I would have told you at a time, reading is like a muscle.
Yeah.
Build that muscle by reading every single day. Right. And then I turned 20 and I met my wife and she's dyslexic. She can't train that muscle. She just can't. Her neurons don't fire that way.
Right.
Right. No matter how hard she stares at a page, she still sees words as shapes.
Right.
The is not T-H-E. The is the shape of the T, the H, and the E. So she has to memorize thousands and thousands and thousands of shapes of words to be able to read.
Holy smokes.
But she's an amazing artist.
Yeah.
She can paint shit I can't even fathom.
Right.
She'll sit on a plane and do this sketch that would take me years to complete and just like bang it out with a pencil and some piece of paper or the back of the throw up bag on the plane. So no, not everybody's gonna be me. I'm really good at aggregating information, collecting information, synthesizing information, and turning it around and teaching it to people.
Right.
I'm just good at that.
Right.
And some people won't be good at that. They just won't. I'm also a very strict creature of habit and routine and systems and protocols. And that is the way that I am wired.
Right.
That is the way that the genes that produce dopamine and serotonin for me fire. Right. I tend to be extremely serotonin dominant. I tend to dwell on problems until they are completely fixed. And so that's chemically
right
the way that I was built.
Right.
And there are other people who will walk away from a problem and leave it be and maybe come up with this elegant solution to that problem while I'm back trying to solve that problem with whatever, you know, hitting it over and over again with whatever hammer I know, while they're out figuring out some brand new solution because they're built differently.
Right.
So no, you will, as you identify, and this returns to the purpose statement,
right?
The things that you were really good at when you were a kid, the things that make time fly by. I can sit in front of a blank page and 4 hours flies by like 15 minutes. My wife can sit in front of a blank page and it's like 2 days.
Right.
Right. That same hour.
Right.
Or 4 hours. And so by remembering what it is you like to do with the kid, what makes time fly by really fast for you right now, those are the two best things you can do.
Right. Right.
That simple. Just start there. And yeah, you don't need to be me, but you have a unique skill set that makes you just as important, valuable, if not more important and valuable than I ever will be to the world. But it all starts with finding your unique purpose in life.
It's amazing. All right, random question. When was the last time you were like seriously stressed? Because I have known you now for quite a few years, and I've never seen you like visibly stressed. Mm-hmm. Does it happen? So you said you get fixed on these problems, right? So when was the last time you like ripped your hair out over something?
It's only happened, I would say, 4 or 5 times in my life that I've been what I would consider to be sympathetically driven to the point where I felt as though I did indeed lose control and was stressed. And again, this is just you know, the way that I'm wired. Even when I played tennis in high school and college, I was always the Iceman. Like you couldn't stress me out.
Yeah.
Like I could be whatever down, 7-6 in the middle of a tiebreaker and, you know, be down 7-5 in the tiebreaker and serving. And for me, it was just another point. Like that's just the way I'm
wired. Is that
wired.
Because you're indifferent to the outcome?
No, it's not because I'm indifferent to the outcome. I just,
you do want to win.
I do want to win, but it's difficult to explain. I want to win, but I feel as though my sympathetic nervous system simply stays under control. Every single time I've been stressed and lost it was when my wife and I were having difficulties, or she really wanted me to do something I didn't want to do, or basically disagreements over something like traditions or like, big decision for the home. And there's been, it's been about 5 times, the last time about 2 years ago, where I really did go and just like put my fist into a wall.
Wow.
Or put my face in a pillow and scream.
Yeah.
Right? Like in all those times. And the reason for that is because the most important thing to me above anything and everything is my family, right? So anytime shit seems to be going south with the one thing that is the most important to me, like, and you know, we have a really good relationship, but the few times that that's happened, and that tells me a very important thing. It tells me that returning, and a lot of this stuff, you know, feeds back on itself, these things we've talked about. If that's the way I react when I feel like I'm losing control of my family, then what is one of the most important filters for me to set up in life?
Right.
How does this impact my family?
Right.
How does this help my children? How does this bring my wife and I closer together? Because if it's that important to me that the only times I've really truly lost it has been when I've felt like I'm losing my family, then you can turn that feedback around and know that, oh, shit, that means that really truly, like deep down in my heart, no matter how many, whatever book I'm working on or the company or, you know, Keon or the podcast or whatever, like I've never lost it when shit's gone south with any of that stuff ever. Right. But that's because that's not as important to me as the one thing that the universe has sent me that message a few times is really important to me. That's family. So
it's incredible.
So, yeah.
Ben, thanks, man. This was a ton of fun.
Thanks for having me on, dude. Your place in Venice Beach is beautiful. You kept me fueled on nicotine gum and limeade and Waterloo. You guys should see the photo of this table. I've just got everything going on here. But yeah, anyways, if I could throw in a last thought, it is that I'm incredibly proud of you, man. And you and I met at a random Spartan race years ago. Yeah, I think you're running around with a walkie-talkie and a blue shirt and dirt in your face. And I've seen you take this dream of developing these life-changing retreats and immersions. And now, you know, interviewing people on a podcast and putting this information out to the world, getting married, just inventing your life in a direction that many people would not be brave or courageous enough to do. Like taking those steps where I'm gonna merge from like an 8-to-5 or a 9-to-5 and step out into the unknown. And for any of you listening in, I mean, if you don't know Joe's backstory, he really has, he's taken a lot of courageous steps to be where he's at right now with Roonga and this podcast and, you know, his marriage. And there's a lot of inspiration that I would encourage you to take from Joe as far as taking charge of your life and just saying, yo, this is how I want my life to be. And this is what I'm going to invent. And it's going to be scary and bumpy and a weird ride, but, so kudos to you, man.
Thanks, Ben. Appreciate it, man.
Yep.
Yeah. Thank you very much. And, to everybody listening, thank you for being here and hanging out with us. And I'll put links to all of Ben's work and his new book and
all that penis stuff.
Yeah, all that penis stuff and those gas station dick pills. Well, everything. All be in the show notes.
Every Amazon affiliate link that exists to gas station dick pills, you'll find in the show notes.
yeah, and all 50 books Ben mentioned on the show.
That's right.
So thank you, guys. Thank you, Ben.
Thanks, Joe.
Appreciate it, brother.
Yep.
Thank you guys so much for listening to today's show. I hope you enjoyed it. For the show notes to today's episode and every episode of Stacked, just head to coachjoedi.com/stacked. And don't forget to leave us a review wherever you found this show. Every 2 weeks, we send one lucky reviewer a gift card worth $150 to kettlebellkings.com, one of my favorite websites. Good luck, and thanks for listening.